Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Networks on Saturday, May 9th, 2015. This is episode 1185. Enjoy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk computers and the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, and smartwatches. This is sad. Now I'm wearing two smartwatches. This has really gone too far. Let me ask Heather, though. She's busy answering the phones. Because I need a style check on this. So I'm wearing the Apple Watch. I'm wearing that for a couple of weeks now. And I spent a little money on this one. This is the stainless steel with Milanese loops. So it's about $700. And then I just got the new LG Urbane. This is an Android Wear watch. So yes, if you have two watches like this, you have to have two phones too, in case you're wondering. The Urbane, well, at first, on the screen, it looked good. Heather, can you help me here? I need aesthetic judgment. On the screen, when I ordered it, it looked good. But now my wife says, oh, that looks so tacky. It looks like you bought that under a bridge or something at a gas station. She's right. Heather, I heard you, even through double panes of glass, say she's right. Kathy, you think it's ugly? Jackie, I mean, do you think it's ugly? Yeah. I'm a nerd. I don't know. I thought those Casio watches were pretty keen. So, I have this. This one's in an interesting mode right now. This is in the, I have to do this with my LG Urbane. The Urbane is $350, which is half, that's the price of the least expensive Apple Watch. But it's expensive for an Android Wear watch, because the Android Wear watches tend to be around $200. But this has I have an interesting face on it now, which is the hiking face. It shows me the compass direction. I'm heading west, as I sit here. It shows me the altitude based on barometric pressure. I'm 19 feet below sea level right now, according to this. And it shows me how many steps I've taken, 324. That was how many steps it was from my bed to the refrigerator to work. So, I rode in a car. They don't count cars. So that's, I don't know, is it ugly, you think? You can't see. It's radio. It's gorgeous. It's like, it looks like solid gold on my wrist. I have to say, I approach smartwatches as watches with great hope each time. Like, this is it. This is the one. This is going to change everything. And each time it's a watch that gives you notifications and counts your steps. It's not, and I like watches. I used to wear watches all the time. I have a few, like, kind of dressy, hand-me-down style watches that my son will not want when I pass. But I don't think these are compelling. It's not a compelling product category. Despite all the marketing in the world, and Apple, boy, is Apple spending millions to convince you. I think the idea of wearables isn't a bad idea. If you want to measure your heart rate, you don't have that many choices of where you could put this thing. Wrist, neck. You could have a smart choke collar. Femoral artery. I don't think that's a very good idea. Where are you going to put it? You got to put it somewhere where they can measure the heartbeat. And I think that's a big part of this I'm told by people who are athletic, that's a big part of this, is monitoring your steps and your heart rate and your exercise. And I got a little, Apple Watch gives you little awards, little digital doohickeys. The last one I got looked like a silver button, like a button, like you button your shirt with. Or Captain America's shield. I wasn't sure which it was. And you get that on your watch. Of course, you can't do anything with it. It's like, you can spend it or anything. But it's a little badge. Oh, you got an award. I got one yesterday. The most active day you've had since you owned me. It was a little silver with a little blue circle in the middle. I feel like the test will be if you start, you know, it's really true. When you walk down the street, everybody has a smartphone now. This is, you know, at least in the United States, in urban areas, everybody has a smartphone. And we're in the San Francisco Bay Area. Up here, everybody's got an iPhone. That's just like everybody. Everybody has an iPhone, except me. I like Android, but everybody else has an iPhone. But I don't see, and I've been looking, a lot of big honking smartwatches. So there you go. So much for that. Uber. Let's talk about Uber. Uber seems to have dodged all the negative press it was getting for the aggressively bro behavior of its management team. They were the programmers that you hear tell about. It's challenging. If you're a startup, you know, in a way, to succeed as a startup, you need to be aggressive. You need to be macho. You need to be aggro. You need to get out there and punch your ways against, and especially Uber, because they had to fight off all the taxi commissions and the state and local government that said, no, you can't have Uber. You know what Uber is? Uber is this, actually, it's kind of an interesting idea. It's a kind of like a taxi service. They have Uber Black Car, which is kind of like fancy car service, and they have Uber X, which is like people driving their own cars in kind of a taxi style. But you have an app, which, by the way, you could put on your Apple Watch, and you tap your Apple Watch to get me a car. And it'll say how far off the car is. Your car's coming in 3 minutes. It'll say the name of the driver. Andy's on his way. Picture of the driver. When the driver pulls up, you can see he's pulled up. He knows you because he sees a picture of you. You know him. You see the picture of him. You get in the car. He takes you where you want to go. You get out of the car. The whole financial transaction is handled invisibly by Uber. That's the Uber. That's the business. And they're growing. They're all over the world. They're everywhere except places where they're outlawed. Because taxi companies, you know, the taxi commissions, they don't like this. It's competition. They don't like it. As a user, it's great. And for a while, I didn't want to use them because they were so aggressively obnoxious. But, you know, the convenience always wins out. I used it the other night. I confess. So Uber plans to raise. They're raising more money. Now, you'd think they have plenty of money. But they need more. They're going to raise, according to the Wall Street Journal, another $1.5 to $2 billion by offering, you know, shares in the company privately to venture capitalists. That'll value them at $50 billion. And you have to think they're not profitable yet. Otherwise, why would they be raising $2 billion? Why would they be asking for more money? $50 billion. This Facebook's the only company in history that's had that been that valuable before going public. $50 billion. And then, along with that rumor, the rumor that they're now going to buy Nokia's map division. Now we know what they need the money for. They want to buy Here Maps. Here Maps is kind of in play. Nokia, which sold, of course, the phone division, the mobile division, to Microsoft a couple years ago. Is down to just a few things. They can't make phones anymore. They have the mapping software. They're down to just a few things. They want to now sell off the map division. And it's going to be fun to watch as Silicon Valley scrambles because, of course, Google Maps is totally dominant. Microsoft has Bing Maps. Dominant's not the first word that leaps to mind. Bing Maps. Apple has its own maps, but Apple Maps, because they started later than Google, it's been struggling. Remember, it's, you know, not, but they've been working hard on it. I think to any of these companies here would be very valuable, but to a taxi company, I guess. I'm not sure what the play is there. In some cities, the Uber drivers are starting to deliver food. Actually, that makes sense. The taxi company in our little town does that. They call it the food taxi. And you can order from local restaurants and the tech. They're just driving around. Why not? Just one more thing to drive around. It doesn't have to just be people. Interesting. Hey, let's take some calls. I don't know what I'm talking about. It's time for you to talk. 888-ASK-LEO. 888-827-5536. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. The phone number, 888-827-5536. You'll be calling the phone ranger, Heather Hammond. Our website, techguylabs.com. Hello, Heather.
Hey, Mr. Laporte.
Hello, Ms. Hammond.
You're wearing a bow tie, so I thought I had to, you know, take things up a notch and be a little more formal today.
I feel like it either makes you look like a mortician or Andy Rooney. I can't really quite figure it out. Who wears bow ties? Nobody wears bow ties anymore.
It kind of reminded me of Captain Kangaroo.
That's
Did he wear a bow tie?
Kind of. I think he wore like one of those big floppy bows. Like guys used to wear
in
the 18, like Little Boy Blue, yeah.
Little Lord Fauntleroy.
I don't know why. Yeah, I feel like that's what Captain Kangaroo was wearing. A lot of people compare me to Captain Kangaroo, to Bob Keeshan. I think it's the calm exterior.
Yeah.
That covers the seething.
We want you to read us a
underneath.
Story.
Yes. Who should we talk to? You've been lining up calls. I see some good ones, it looks like.
Yes, we like Mike a lot.
Oh.
He just needs help. You like spending other people's money.
I do.
And he's in Indiana, Pennsylvania.
Oh, gosh.
What?
So confusing. Thank you, Heather. Hi, Mike.
Hello, Leo. How you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm just wonderful. I need your help. I'm on Verizon right now, and I need to stay on Verizon because they have the good coverage in our area. And my contract's about to run out on my phone and my son's phone and my wife's phone. So I need to get some new phones.
Yes.
And so, but I want to buy my own phone and go on a month to month. So I'm thinking of going on the Total Wireless. I think that's Verizon's.
You mean you want to get off the family plan or?
Well, maybe, I guess.
Family plans. In fact, somebody was saying he doesn't understand why people just don't band together, even if they're not family. Just get six people together, because the family plans usually are a good deal, unless your family's doing something like using up all your data.
No, we don't use that much data, actually. I think between my son and I, we probably only use about, 4 gig.
Okay.
Not even.
Okay.
So I don't use my wife on a flip phone, so she doesn't even use any data.
Right.
So it's just the two of us. Who really are using the data, so that initial cost just seems to kick it up a little higher.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to go to a month-to-month plan. So I'm looking to buy a phone.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to spend like $500 or $600 or $700. So I'm even thinking, I'm going from right now, I got a Droid Razor HD. So
okay.
I'm really old technology.
If you like the Droids, and of course that's the Verizon Android for Motorola. The Droid Turbo is quite nice. That's the newest one.
Okay. But, again, I'm trying to stay reasonable. So I'd even be willing to go a generation back.
Okay.
You know, I don't need to get the, you know, Samsung Galaxy S6, maybe the S5. But I've heard you're not that thrilled with the S5.
Yeah. You know, if they still offer the S3, that was kind of a great phone.
That's what my son has now, is an S3. Unfortunately, he cracked the screen, so that's not going to get replaced.
So you want to buy it from Verizon. You know, you can. A couple of things about Verizon. You don't have an unlimited data plan, I take it.
No.
People who are grandfathered in with the unlimited data are at a disadvantage in Verizon, because if you take a subsidized phone, they'll turn off the unlimited data. All the companies, AT&T is doing this too, are really pushing people to get off unlimited data. They hate it.
Well, like I said, we don't use that much.
You don't use it, so you don't care. You can bring a phone to Verizon, of course.
Right.
You don't have to get one of their. But let me look at the prepaid devices they have available, and I can tell you what's.
Because I'm even looking at, like, you know, I was thinking maybe a Moto X. Should I get one of those?
Like the Moto X, that's about a year old now.
Yeah,
it's a nice size.
One, but I don't think the OnePlus One you can get on Verizon.
Yeah. You might be able to use it on Verizon, maybe, because Verizon, like all the – so here's the problem. In the until recently, Verizon and Sprint used a technology called CDMA,
right.
AT&T and T-Mobile used something called GSM. GSM's
right.
Widely used around the world. CDMA is mostly U.S. and Canada. So for a long time, you couldn't get a GSM phone and use it on those services. But what's changed is now they've all moved towards LTE.
Okay.
And Verizon does this voice over LTE in many markets. So it turns out, I mean, I wouldn't necessarily be recommending the experiment, But it turns out you can often get a GSM phone, put it, as long as it's an LTE phone, put a Verizon SIM in it, and it seems to work okay. I've gone the other direction. My iPhone's from Verizon. I use it on AT&T just by putting an AT&T SIM on it. In theory, that shouldn't work, but because it's all LTE, it does. But you'd probably best get going to the Verizon store and getting a phone that they recommend.
Okay.
I'm trying to think what would be – I do like the OnePlus One. At $350, it's a great choice.
Yeah, that's right. It's usually a reasonable price. And, and you can get – the Lollipop on them?
Yeah, they're shipping it currently with CyanogenMod, but they've parted company with CyanogenMod. So if you're a little handy, it's not too hard. You can follow instructions. You can root the phone and put a different recovery on it and then put their CyanogenMod's Oxygen OS on it, which is basically pure Lollipop, Android 5.0. And okay. I did that to mine, and I love it. Really love it.
The phone, though.
Pardon me?
It takes some rooting of the phone.
Yeah, you have to be a little handy. You have to software handy. You have to root the phone. I'm just trying to think what would be a good choice. I like the Moto X. Google's Nexus 6 does not work on Verizon, so that's probably not a good choice.
Okay.
And it's not that cheap.
Right.
It's not that cheap. So.
Are you really not a fan of the Galaxy S5?
No, it's not horrible. The reason I didn't recommend it and the reason it didn't sell well is it was not much of an improvement on the S4.
Okay.
And the other reason I'm not crazy about it is because Samsung, you know, lards it up as usual with their own TouchWiz interface and the Samsung apps, and then you'll get the Verizon apps, and by the time you're done, you make sure you get a 32-gigabyte phone, otherwise you won't have any room left on it.
Yeah.
Verizon does sell the Nexus 6, but again, it's an awfully big phone, and it's not spectacular. I think the S5 would be fine. S5 would be fine, and not a bad choice, frankly.
Yeah, especially coming from where I'm, coming from the Droid 3HD, which is about 4 years old.
I'm loving the Galaxy S6.
Okay, yeah, I've seen.
But that's expensive, so get the S5 if they offer a deal on it. Yeah.
Okay, maybe I'll.
They might, because nobody. It didn't sell well. Hey, thank you. I appreciate the call.
Hey, thanks.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to, and I've ordered the LG G4. And you can't. You know, this is starting to break the bank here. I can't keep up with these. The phone companies are releasing new, $500, $600, $700 phones every few months now, and I feel obligated to. Why are you smiling? I feel obligated. You feel like you don't believe me when I say this. I'm doing this for you. I feel obligated to buy these phones so I can talk about them. Okay, I admit it. I have a problem. The new LG G4, one of the variants, comes with a leather back. Now, the G4 is in many ways similar to the S6. Good camera, fast processor. But it has a removable battery, which I like, and SD card storage, which I like. I'll let you know. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Nobody, but you see, Adrian doesn't believe me. I do this for you, Adrian. I'm not making this up. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, and that magic music means it's time for our home theater guru. That's Scott Wilkinson from the AVS Forum. He's also the host of Home Theater Geeks, the podcast on twit.tv/HTG. Hello, Scott D.
Hey, Leo, how you doing?
I'm good. How you?
I'm very good, thank you. I had a little adventure this week.
Uh-oh.
Like you, I sometimes sacrifice and suffer for my art.
Okay. You bought a nice TV. What'd you do?
Nope. I went to see The Avengers Age of Ultron.
Oh, in 3D?
Twice in one day.
Oh, Lord. I won't do that. I'm sorry. I love you, but I'm not going to do that. Yeah.
No, I don't expect anybody to do that. I'm a geek. What can I tell you? I had an opportunity to go see it in normal digital cinema. It's in 3D. Okay.
Yeah.
At normal digital cinema with a lamp-based projector and regular polarized 3D glasses. And then right across the street, that was at the El Capitan Theater in Hollywood, right on Hollywood Boulevard, where all the crazies are. Right across the street is the new IMAX laser-illuminated projector system, where they weren't originally going to show Avengers because it was across the street at the El Capitan, but they got it for 5 days. And so I said, you know what? I'm going to go compare the two. I'm going to go see what the difference is. And so I went to the El Cap. I saw it there. I went across the street to the IMAX, and I watched it again. It was... I will tell you this, Leo. I am coming around to your position on 3D.
What?
Yeah.
Don't you love it? Don't you? Well, doesn't it make you happy?
I do love 3D. I really do enjoy it. But these new laser illuminated projectors, which I'm really big on, I think they're fantastic.
And they're brighter, right?
And they're much brighter. So the 3D is much brighter. And so it should be a lot better.
Right.
The 3D at the El Capitan was very dim, as it always is. A single projector.
Yeah, see, I hate that.
Yeah, polarized glasses that rob a lot of light. You get very little light actually coming into your eyeball.
Is it about half as bright as a...
Less than.
Less than half as bright. Wow.
Less than half as bright. Wow. So the laser projectors give you the standard amount of light coming into your eye after they pass through the glasses, which is a great thing.
Yeah.
What's not so great is the fact that the laser projectors use a different type of 3D, a different technology for 3D, which is sometimes called spectrum separation, color separation, 6P for 6 primary. And what that means is the wavelengths of red, green, and blue going to each eye are slightly different. And so the glasses have these filters that let one set of red, green, and blue come into one eye, and the other set of red, green, and blue, which is slightly different, come into the other eye.
Okay.
Well, that's the same thing as Dolby 3D, and it works quite well with one exception. If you wear prescription glasses.
Well, that's a lot of us. What happens then?
Well, these 3D glasses have a very polished mirror-like surface on the inside. So the light comes in. Some of it reflects off of the prescription glasses, back to the inner surface of the 3D glasses, back to the prescription glasses, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. You get these reflections, and I see them all around the image. It even gives the image a bit of a milky cast to it. Very distracting.
Wait a minute. Do you see yourself in the glasses?
No. You see something from the screen, or maybe the exit sign.
Oh,
in the
great
theater. Something like that. Yeah. You know, or some part of the image of on the screen, but it's outside the screen boundary, and it's kind of what's that? Kind of you get distracted all the time,
right.
And I just found it very distracting. The best image I saw all day and all night, I was there, I saw it twice, and it's 2.5 hours long, so that's 5 hours of my life I'll never get back.
Did you like the movie?
You know, I personally did. My friend and a fellow a journalist, Mike Heiss, saw it too, and he said, man, that movie gives stupid a bad name. And I didn't think it was quite that bad. I like the jokes and the one-liners and the stuff in the Avengers movies. And of course, Stan Lee makes a cameo, as he always does, getting totally drunk. But that's another story.
So I like the idea of being more immersive. The more realistic a movie is, the better. I mean,
sure.
I don't have a problem with that. My problem with existing 3D stuff is it's distracting. It takes you out of the movie, not puts you into it. It doesn't make it more immersive. In some ways, it makes it less immersive. If you're aware, in this case, of the exit sign.
Yes.
That's less immersive.
Yes. And that's what I think is wrong with this, what's called color separation or 6P 3D, as opposed to polarized. IMAX used to use polarized 3D, and I thought it looked great. Of course, it depends on how they do it, and in the case of the Avengers, it's done after the fact, which oftentimes actually looks better to me.
What do you mean after the fact?
They shot the movie in 2D, and then in post-production, they actually added the 3D element to it.
But you think that's a better way to do it?
In many cases, yes. Animation is an exception.
Right.
Animation, you can generate it 3D right from the start, and it looks fantastic. But when you're shooting 3D, you have to make some decisions as you're shooting. Whereas if you do it after the fact, you can try something and go, oh, that doesn't really work. Let's try something else.
When they shoot a movie and they know they're going to make it 3D, I'm sure they knew Age of Ultron would be 3D.
Oh, yeah.
Do they, you know, on some smartphones, including this G4, the new LG I was talking about, they have a depth sensor. In fact, the new iPhone supposedly will have this fall. And that adds some information that allows you. Do they do anything like that when they're making the movie? Some sort of additional camera for depth information or anything?
Well,
like
I don't know that they do any additional camera, but they do shoot it. There are some scenes in Ultron that certainly, you know, they knew that it was going to be 3D.
Because they have stuff coming at you.
Yeah, or stuff receding away from you.
Ah, okay.
Which is more important to me than stuff coming at you. That's, you know, can look pretty hokey, but... stuff receding from you, or like a big building that has a long hallway, or a big cylindrical building that you're looking down and gives you a little vertigo. That's much more effective,
right?
And they shoot those specifically because they know, oh well, in post production we're going to add 3D, and this is going to look really cool in 3D. And it does.
That's the other thing I don't like, because you tend to do gimmicky things, not in service of the movie, not in service of the story, but just in service of, oh, we've got 3D. Let's, you know, show off again. That takes me out of the movie. So I think people misunderstand my point of view. I agree that anything that makes it more realistic and immersive would be better. I just always feel like the technologies used for 3D are uncomfortable. They dim the movie, and if they don't dim the movie, then you see the exit sign. They do things like have snowflakes fall in your lap or sticks go over your head, all of which is like, ooh, nice effect, instead of, oh, this story is really engrossing. And I'm here.
Pulling into the story, right? Yeah. You're exactly right. And whenever they use 3D in a gimmicky way like that, or to just sort of show off, hey, look, I'm in 3D,
right?
Then yeah, sure, it pulls me out of the story, no question.
Yeah.
But I've seen 3D that worked very, very well and was very effective in enhancing the story. But this new type of 3D, which is relatively new to most people, but as laser projectors, laser illuminated projectors, to be precise, become more prevalent. And I've just posted a piece on AVS Forum with a list of all the laser projector locations around the world. And when you see something in 2D, it looks amazing.
Laser's better for 2D then.
No question.
Okay.
The best image I saw that whole day was a 7-minute clip from Tomorrowland.
Oh, I can't
2D.
Wait to see that. Can't wait
man,
to see that.
Man, oh man, that looked good.
Yeah. Scott Wilkinson, avsforum.com. And of course, don't forget his Home Theater Geeks show every week at twit.tv/HTG. Thanks for joining us. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I feel like this is the time on the tech guy when we dance. Leo Laporte. Scott Wilkinson's dancing. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888-ASK. Leo, that's the phone number. Moving on. Robert, Greensboro, North Carolina. Hi, Robert. Leo Laporte here.
Hey, Leo. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
All right. Been a fan since the Tech TV days, and love the new screensavers. Watched it last week live while y'all were doing it. It was great.
Thank you. That's very nice of you. It's a new podcast we're doing Saturday afternoons right after the radio show at twit.tv. It's fun. It's fun. I think Kevin Rose is going to join me today.
So yeah, I'm looking forward to watching today.
Yeah,
so,
thank you.
But I got a quick question for you. I'm at my upgrade time on Verizon, and I've got the Galaxy Note 2 right now, which I have loved. I love this phone to death, but
we should get the Note 4 then.
Well, that's what I was going to ask. I've been wearing the Note 4, but then as I was looking last night, of course, I saw the Note Edge. And
oh, no.
I
would get the Note 4. I love the Note 4. So the Note line, the Galaxy Note line, is probably most people know as their big screen phone, this 5.5 inches. And it's a gorgeous screen. It's the Galaxy Note 4 screen is the best ever, and it's got a great camera. It's just a very nice phone, and since you like the big phones, you're going to love it. You know, the multi-window operation, all the same things. The Edge, though, was kind of gimmicky, and I did get both to try it, and I kept the Note 4 without the Edge because the Edge, it's got some stuff in it. I do know people who love it, and I love, you know, what's funny is I love the Galaxy S6 Edge. But even though it's a curved screen, I love it for the aesthetics of it. It doesn't do any of the things that the Note 4 Edge does. So the Note 4 Edge is a separate screen. That little curved thing on the right there is a completely separate screen from the big screen. That means they can put, you know, bubbles going up the side if they want temperature right. and weather information. You can use it for sports scores. The idea, I think, when Samsung announced it, was that you would be at a meeting, for instance, you put your phone down on the table, and without lifting it up, you could read the edge, except somebody didn't send a memo to the engineers, because when you do that, the edge is upside down, and there's no way to flip it around. So I don't really – they fixed that in the S6. I'm not sure what they were thinking. Okay. I'm not going to say don't get it, because you might. I do know people who like it, and it is an additional screen. So you could put icons there for your favorite people that you call. You could put icons there for applications to launch. I just didn't feel like it added enough usefulness. It does add $100 to the cost, and I didn't feel like it added enough usefulness.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering. Is it worth the extra $100?
I would say not.
I don't think it is. It doesn't sound like it is.
I would say not.
I use it more for the tether feature, so I can hook tether my laptop.
Oh, well, then you don't care. Don't spend more money on the display. So, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's why I was wondering, because I was looking at them last night and trying to compare them, and I didn't see a lot of difference as far, to justify an extra $100, but I wanted to get an opinion of somebody I really respect.
Well, thank you.
And like. So.
Thank you. Well, and I did use both to see, and I ended up just choosing the flat one. In fact, I kind of almost wished I'd chosen the flat S6. I chose the Edge S6 Edge. That's the newest one, just because I like how it feels. There's no real usefulness to the curve, but I also find I accidentally touched the screen a little more than I thought I would. You have to hold it gingerly to keep your fingers off the curve. So I kind of wish I'd bought the flat one, except it looks like everybody else, and I wanted to be
different. All right, well, I appreciate it. You helped me make my decision.
Hey, great. Thank you for calling, Robert. I appreciate it. Take care.
Thank you.
Tom in Huntington, Virginia. Hi, Tom. Leo Laporte. Huntington Beach, California. Leo Laporte.
Hey, Leo.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing well. Love your show, except the fact you cost me a fortune over the years.
My
shiny, fun things.
My sponsors, thank you.
I'm having a little trouble with backup.
Okay.
For a long time, I've been using a Kronos True Image.
Which I like a lot.
And I started having troubles with that, and so I thought, well, while I was having, what it would do is it would go along, it would be fine for a while, and then all of a sudden it would start creating errors, and I would give up, and I would start a new backup session, and that would run okay for a while, and then I would have problems.
Let me ask you about True Image. It's like a ghosting program, right? It takes the whole hard drive and backs it up, everything, Windows, applications, data, everything. And creates a file that, if you restore it, will put the hard drive back to that state. So you say you continue to run it. Does it do something called incremental updates to that backup? In other words, is it saying, oh, you changed a few things, let's update that image?
Yeah, I've had it set up to do a full backup once a week and then incremental backups.
Okay.
And then keep. I've done various things, but lately I've been keeping two or three, I forget exactly what it is, of the full backups and then starting over again.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it may be that that's what's happening is that as you do incremental backups to the original, it gets munged up, and it's probably good to start fresh once in a while. Yeah.
So while this was going on, I installed Carbonite as a sort of a backup to the backup.
As you should, because a local, and we've talked about this on the ads, Carbonite's an advertiser. The local backup is not enough. You need to have one off site as well.
Right. And yeah. I can't get Carbonite to work.
What's the matter?
It'll run for about 5 minutes, and then I'll get a blue screen that'll say your PC has run into a problem and needs to restart.
Yikes! That's not good.
It says PNP detected fatal error.
Huh.
So it'll restart. It'll be fine. Carbonite will run again. I can see it running.
I can't help you because this is something that's completely local to you.
Right.
So there's some interaction. I'm not sure what it is. Have you tried calling Carbonite? They have very good support.
Oh, sure. Yeah. I called them. They suggested I reinstall it. I tried that. They suggested that rather than running it on the solid-state drive, they said there might be – I've got a solid-state drive and a 3-gig.
That's what – I was going to ask you because I see this PNP thing. That usually means plug-and-play. That means additional hardware attached to your system. And if it's crashing, it sounds like it's a driver. You don't get a blue screen unless a driver crashes. So it sounds like it's a driver, probably a disk driver, that is crashing. And it didn't happen until you put on Carbonite, but it may be that just, you know, the act of using this this backup is exercising in a way that is unusual. So the trick is to figure out what, and this is challenging because it is a driver, so it's not something that's obviously running.
Right, I can tell you what I did try. I tried I tried removing everything that was USB.
Take all the USBs off. That's the first thing I always do. Yep.
Right.
Still happening?
Right, it would still happen.
Okay.
I mean, including even the USB keyboard and the USB mouse. I went to a PS2 to be able to run it.
Okay.
Tried that. They had suggested, why didn't I try just doing the D drive, which is where my real data is, not the programs.
Yeah, I do not recommend with Carbonite or, frankly, any backup solution, except if you're doing imaging as you're doing with the Acronis, backing up Windows or apps, because you can't really restore those. Just back up your data.
Right.
Still doing it, though, huh?
The D drive, that didn't work.
Yeah.
Carbonite suggests that I take it to a computer place and have them check it out.
It's hard for them. And by the way, we're out of time, so I'm just going to have to punt a little bit on this. I'm glad that they spent some time with you. It's hard for when you have an issue that's so specific to a local computer, very tough to fix it remotely, as I'm having the same difficulty. So I echo their advice. I don't have any other tips to give you. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smart watches, smart phones, smart people. 8888-ASK-LEO, that's the number. 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. Outside those areas, Skype will work. We hear from people all over the world all the time. Thanks to the internet, you can hear this show everywhere. And you can also visit our website. I don't give out that address enough. I really should give it out more. It's techguylabs.com. We've got a couple of ideas for blue screens of death with Carbonite, and we'll put those up in the show notes there for our last caller. What we do is the site, which, by the way, you don't have to sign up for. I don't ask you for information or anything. You just visit it, click a link, and it's like that. It's all free. We divide it up into shows. And then each show into hours, and then each hour into calls, so you can drill down to the call you want. And then there's comments there also. So if you have suggestions, we appreciate it. Put those in the comments section. That's techguylabs.com. Jay is on the line from Providence, North Carolina. Hi, Jay.
Hey, Leo. I'm hoping to find a cure for a recurring problem of delayed voicemail notifications. And by delay, I mean 24 to 96 hours.
You need more cowbell. Oh, no, that's wrong. That's the different fever. Yeah, I've had that happen, too, and there's no cure. It's not you. It's your cell carrier. You know, when I got the Apple Watch, I started sending my wife a lot of heartbeats, and she wouldn't get them, or she'd get them the next day. It's like, come on. What's the point of a heartbeat the day after? And so I think that really comes from the carrier, and I don't know why it happens. I wish I did know why it happens. I have heard people complain about this before. Is it usually inter-carrier? So Verizon to AT&T or T-Mobile to Verizon, that kind of thing?
It seems to be, yes.
Yeah. I think the carriers don't like each other. I don't know where I get that idea. And maybe the interface between the two. Remember when text messaging started, you couldn't text message somebody on a different carrier. If you were on AT&T, you could not message somebody on Verizon. Actually, in those days, it was like Cellular One, right? And you couldn't message somebody on 9X or whatever. It's one of the reasons text messaging did not take off in the U.S. as rapidly as it did around the world. And I remember, it wasn't so long ago, sitting and watching like British TV shows, and they'd say text send us a text. Here's our text short code. And I think, wow, people must really use text messaging. The other thing, of course, that held it back in the U.S. was lack of smartphones. You have a feature phone and you have to get a letter, press, you know, if you want S, you have to press 7QR three times. If you want a number, you have to press it four times. I mean, that's just too painful. But once we had smartphones starting in 2007 with the iPhone, or Blackberries, I guess, people started using texting. And then the unification of all of the carriers was what really made the difference. It's same thing with email. In the early days of email, you had to be on the same – you may not remember this. But back with it, when it was MCI mail and Genie and these various different systems, you could only MCI mail somebody else on MCI mail. So you had to know what their MCI mail address was. And if you didn't know it, or you didn't know who, if they were on some other service, you were out of luck. It's a big day. It was a big day when you could email from your AOL account to your Genie account or your CompuServe friends. That was a big day. Anyway, nowadays we feel like, well, emailing all goes, should go instantly, right? Instantly from everywhere to everywhere. And most of the time it does. Occasionally it doesn't. Same thing with text messaging, although it's much. Everybody has some experience of text messages taking a long time to go through. I can't give you an answer. It's not something wrong with your phone. It's something wrong with your carrier. And you can call them and complain. That's about it. Greg in Tampa, Florida. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Greg.
Hey, Leo, screen service guy. I've got a question that will take the tech level from what it's been back down to stupid.
No, I'm sure that's not the case. What can I do for you?
Used to be out of Dillon Beach. I'm almost a neighbor of yours, but
love Dillon Beach. Isn't that beautiful? We go there all the time.
It is. It is. Yeah. I miss it out here in Florida.
Well, I think your Florida beaches might be a little better.
Well, we don't live in a beach. We live inland.
Oh, well, then you have no beach.
Everything here wants to bite you. From
yeah.
No seams all the way up to alligators.
Yeah. That's why I don't live in Florida.
So my question is this.
Whether you put that on the car license plates. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Okay. I'm sorry, too. In Colorado or from Florida here, we log into the computers, and we have webcams in Colorado. We have D-Link, and we have Hawking, and we have Foscam brand webcams. We like to log in to see what's going on at our house out there. And every time we do that, the problem is that we log into the webcam with the username password.
Yeah.
And then there's no image. So I have to click. I finally figured out to click compatibility view.
Okay.
And add that IP address and then click close. And then
where
I
are you clicking compatibility view? In the video driver?
No, in the Windows Explorer.
In Explorer.
Yeah.
You mean the Internet Explorer? You mean the browser?
I do.
Yeah. Interesting.
Well.
So if you and so you're looking at this, it's a black screen, and where do you find compatibility mode? Is that in the Internet options?
Internet Explorer tools options.
Tools options.
Compatibility view. Yeah.
Yeah. I wonder what that is.
Avoid that. Compatibility view settings, I guess, is what Windows.
One thing you can do, and I suspect this is it, but you'll have to try it to see if I'm right. In the early days of PCs, the video cards could not, actually Windows could not keep up with video. And so there's a setting in the video card driver called compatibility mode that allows it to blast the video right to the video card's frame buffer, not have Windows handle it at all. And in those days, if it wasn't set right, you'd just get a black window or sometimes a green window where the video was supposed to show up.
Remember, this was stupid level.
So, yes. So, and I may be giving you stupid answers, so that's appropriate.
So
what you're going to do is I'm going to give you the top level, and I'll explain how to do it, is go to the video device driver, mm-hmm. and check the box or uncheck the box for video compatibility. What version of somebody in the chat room said, make sure you're using the latest version of Internet Explorer. What version of IE are you using?
11, I think, both on Windows 7 and 8.
Okay. Yeah, I don't think the FOSCAM site is that old. I'm thinking everything else in the site loads, just the video, right?
Yeah, there was a problem there too. They to try and download the software for the FOSCAM independent of D-Link and Hawking. It wouldn't do it, but because their certificate was out of date. But
oh,
so I changed
Lord.
The computer date. Well, I changed the computer date back.
And that worked, huh?
Yeah, it did. Yeah.
I would say, and the chat room's saying kind of vociferously that try a different browser, Google Chrome, for instance.
Okay.
And see how that works. I think that might be the safest and easiest. Go to google.com/Chrome. I like that browser a lot. I know it's a pain to have different browsers and so forth, but I would try that. If it doesn't work there, I think maybe the FOSCAM website is having issues. The fact that its certificate was out of date is not a good sign. This was the company that had a flaw in the software that allowed anybody to view your camera without the password. I think they fixed that. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We were talking off the air, the chat room. Chat room's so helpful. If you haven't been in the chat room, irc.twit.tv or go to techguylabs.com for a link. The chat room is saying that, and this is an argument to not buy FOSCAM cameras right here. To begin with, you know, they had a well-known security flaw. This was a few years back that allowed bad guys to log on to any FOSCAM anywhere over the internet without a password. And there were directories online where you could just browse through all of the unsecured FOSCAM cameras. I think they fixed, I hope they fixed that. But a couple of red flags here from our last caller. First of all, he was trying to download the software, and the security certificate was out of date. Very bad. That means there's somebody asleep at the switch at the FOSCAM company. And now I'm being told by the chat room that, in fact, the FOSCAM website to view your camera will only work on Internet Explorer with ActiveX controls enabled. In other words, they haven't updated it for modern technologies. It won't work with Chrome. It won't work with Firefox. It'll only work with Internet Explorer. And if you're using, as our caller was, a up-to-date version of Internet Explorer, woe on you, because now you have to go into the security settings and re-enable ActiveX. You have to turn on the ActiveX controls. ActiveX is a very dangerous technology, which even Microsoft now has stopped distributing. So, boy, that's three strikes against FOSCAM. Get a drop cam next time. And if you're in the market, don't, you know, that's three strikes. That's not good. You know, a history of really kind of lax security, not paying attention, not updating the website, and really forcing its users to turn on an insecure technology. The reason ActiveX is a bad idea and the reason Microsoft has abandoned it and won't support it going forward is because it allows a website to run software on your computer. Seemed like a good idea at the time. Not so much anymore. Not so much anymore. And, of course, it won't work with a Mac or anything that doesn't support ActiveX. You know, this happens sometimes. You see, we have a small little local bank that says you have to use Internet Explorer to access our online banking. Well, that's because it's using ActiveX. Not a good idea. Richard in Commerce, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Richard.
Hello, Leo. How are you today?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm wonderful. Thank you. Listen, I purchased a little box and it received Internet. It was called Clear Internet. I bought it about 2 years ago, and it, you stick it in the window, and there's no wires involved except going into the hard wires going into the PC to give it, you know, the internet.
Yeah,
and it
it's using cell phone data.
Yes. Well, Sprint bought them about a year ago.
Yeah.
Instantly raised it up a few bucks,
Yep.
And now they're shutting down. Now they're discontinuing all clear service as of the end of September, beginning of September.
I had one of these clear devices. This was based on a technology everybody thought was going to change the world called WiMAX. It's like a Wi-Fi, only it was WiMAX. And I remember talking about this 10 years ago. This is going to make it possible to have high-speed internet in rural areas. This is going to be a huge breakthrough. And, in fact, Sprint bought into it. They said, we're not going to do LTE. Everybody else is going to do LTE. We're going to do WiMAX. And it almost killed the company. And, of course, Sprint was a major investor in Clear. Eventually had to buy Clear because Clear was flopping. And now Sprint's discontinuing it because they're taking down all their WiMAX towers. It's over.
It is. Huh?
Yeah, it was a bad technology to begin with. If you were near, and apparently you were, because it sounds like you were happy with it. If you were near a WiMAX point and close by, it was great.
Mm-hmm.
But everybody else, you know, and the problem is Sprint made this their data connection for their smartphones, and it was a miserable failure. So Sprint's moved to LTE. They're moving to LTE as fast as they can, as fast as their little Sprint legs will take them. But
is there something compatible that I can replace it with? It doesn't
yes.
require a contract that I can also hardwire into my PC, because I don't have my PC. My desktop does not receive Wi-Fi.
Yeah, I mean, what Clear did, you can still do, which is get a LTE access point. And so you had the Clear plugged in, though. You had it hardwired.
I had it hardwired in.
Yeah, yeah. Almost all of these LTE devices, actually, there are a couple of that have Ethernet. But most of the ones, if you go to the Sprint store or the AT&T or Verizon store, they'll sell you Wi-Fi access points that use the 4G the 4G connection. It works quite well. There are a couple of companies that make these with Ethernet, though. The question is, which carriers? You will have, I think you're going to have a monthly fee, I'm afraid.
Uh-huh.
I don't think any carrier will sell this without a monthly fee. But yeah, there are a number of, I'm looking on the internet, and there are a number of companies that make these solutions that have Ethernet instead of Wi-Fi. The other way you could go is to get an inexpensive USB Wi-Fi adapter for your desktop, plug that in, now it would have Wi-Fi. And then you still put the thing in the window, right?
Right.
Yeah. Putting it in the window is a good idea. I think you're going to have to move to the modern technology, and you may have a monthly fee. I hate to say it. That's how most of these guys sell their data. But I'll tell you what, if somebody has a solution, put this in the show notes, techguylabs.com. Chatroom's saying Freedom Pop. Yeah, Freedom Pop is free internet. Seems like a good idea. It also seems like it doesn't make a... it doesn't make a lot of economic sense. I'm not sure exactly. 100% free. You know, when you see that, 100% free mobile phone and high-speed internet, you kind of get, how could they make a business out of that? And I'm not sure, but I would guess they're showing ads and so forth. But I don't know. You might look into Freedom Pop, see if they're available in your neck of the woods. Doesn't that ring another alarm bell when you say 100% free mobile phone and high-speed internet service? Absolutely free, huh? That's a business? Somebody's made a business out of free. Well, they're monetizing it somehow. There's got to be some way that they're getting some money out of you. So I would investigate that. It also is not available everywhere, but it uses LTE, I'm pretty sure. And they'll sell you a tablet and so forth. And since it's free, there's no monthly fee. I haven't had the nerve to try it. I guess I should. Let me apply for it. See if I can get it in my zip code. Yeah, unfortunately, I have to give them an email address before they'll tell you whether you can get it. That always makes me nervous, too. Please include your street address. Okay. Now they want my address and my zip code. Now I have to tell them. They still haven't told me if I can get it in my neighborhood. Do you want mobile phone on the go internet? I don't know. Let me try a mobile phone. Can I get it? They're trying to sell me a phone. They still haven't said whether I can get it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Johnny Jett, I'm sorry to say, is on a boat, so he can't join us for his travel segment, which is usually heard at this time. He'll be back next week. 8888-ASK, Leo. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I've been kind of reviewing the deal on Freedom Pop. Somebody in our chat room, Murray on Travel, actually says he uses it. You can roll over his monthly data. Free is it's a special usage of the word free. And I guess that's why they call it Freedom Pop. It's freedom, not free beer. It's you're free. You have freedom. You have liberty. But you're going to pay something. They give you the first 500 megabytes are free, and then you have to pay what is actually about double the going rate for additional gigabytes. There are ways to keep it free by clicking on ads or signing up for offers and things like that. So I get it. So it's not free. It's freedom. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo. Sam's in Hemet, California. Hi, Sam.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing great.
What can I do for you today?
Well, my question is kind of different. I was actually looking at an email from actually one of your competitors in Arizona, and I clicked on a link that took me to a site, and immediately the tab that opened was malware. Now, I didn't.
How did you know it was malware?
Well, because it says call. It said Microsoft, this 800 number.
Oh, Lord.
And then it locked Chrome completely. I couldn't do anything with Chrome.
Oh, so, Jiminy.
Well, but now it gets more interesting. I thought, well, let me try something else. Can I get to the control panel? Well, I could get to the control panel, but I couldn't delete or uninstall Chrome. So I went to Internet Explorer to see if that worked, and it did. Downloaded Blurry Utilities, Registry Cleaner, and ran that. Did nothing. And then I went to Task Manager and deleted or ended all of the Google-related tasks, and then I was able to delete it.
Ah.
I reinstalled it, and then after a short period of time, that tab reappeared and locked it again.
Oh, wow.
So I was always under the impression once malware, like the FBI thing, took over, you couldn't get to anything. It wouldn't let you get to the control panel or anything else.
It is all different. There's no magical thing that they all do. So malware could do all sorts of things, from popping up ads at random times to locking all of your files. Uninstalling Chrome is probably of limited value. I'm not sure what happened. I presume you rebooted the machine since this happened.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and then I downloaded malware bytes and ran it. And since I did that, it hasn't reappeared.
Well, that's good.
It's been about a week. And I was just wondering, have you ran across that kind of a limited deal before?
Oh, yeah, all the time.
Most people would have thought, I can't get to anything, but I was able to get to other stuff.
Yeah, malware could do all sorts of things. There's no one thing malware does. It does a huge variety of things. In this case, you got what's called a browser hijacker object, or BHO. That's what I think, anyway. These things often attempt to install toolbars. In general, the kinds of things they do are change your homepage, change your search tool, add ads to the stuff you're looking at, that kind of thing. They make their money by views and clicks, basically putting more ads on your screen, and that makes them some money, a few cents per computer, but if they install it on a million computers, that can add up.
Right.
So I think it sounds like Malware Bytes found the browser hijacker object and was able to remove it. So that's the good news.
Yeah. I was just curious whether I should go back to a restore point before that time.
It wouldn't hurt. It would not hurt.
Okay.
Again, a lot of malware. There's literally 30,000 or 40,000 different kinds of Windows malware. They all, they have different things they do. Some of the malware will modify your restore points.
Oh, okay.
So a restore can be good or bad. I don't think it would hurt to do a restore. This doesn't sound like that intrusive. It probably was a browser hijacker object that was badly written or written for an older version of Chrome, and it crashed Chrome. Chrome is designed, by the way, to isolate these things as best as possible, the way they call it sandboxing them. So, often a tab will crash, but the rest of Chrome will continue to operate. It sounds like this really messed Chrome up pretty badly.
Yeah, it did. And like I say, it's working really good now so far. I've just got my fingers crossed.
Good.
Can I ask you one other quick question?
Certainly.
Using Chrome, I activated the voice-activated search on Google at one time.
Yeah.
And when I did that, every time I went to Google, to the Google tab, my camera would come on.
Oh, that's not good. I think you have some other things on your system.
Yeah. But I haven't tried that since I've, reinstalled it, done it. But I've turned the voice.
You do not want to have your camera come on. In fact, it shouldn't be coming on unless you run something that wants the camera. So that I'm glad you noticed that. So the little red light came on, right?
Exactly. And
now,
I noticed that.
It might be using the microphone in your camera. If you don't have a microphone elsewhere, maybe that's why.
Well, that could be. I don't keep my headset plugged in, so camera mic. Okay,
the camera is required to turn on its light if it's activated anyway. So maybe it was merely the microphone and the camera.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I feel a little better now.
Yeah.
Okay.
Usually, at some point, you were asked permission to do this. Problem is, we often just go, I want you to do whatever it is you need to do. And we miss the little details that it says, I'm going to, for instance, need to access your camera to use the microphone.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Here's what I would suggest, though, for future, if you can do it, sometimes it's inconvenient, is to not run as an administrator in your Windows, but run as a limited or standard user. You could do that pretty simply. Go into your control panel, create a new user that's an administrator before you do anything else, and remember the password. I call them admin. You can make the password admin if you want. Admin, admin, that's fine. Or you want to be a little secure, make it admin backwards. ADMINNIMDA, NIMDA. So admin NIMDA. And that you'll use only when you want to install software or make some modifications to the system. Then log out of your account, log in as admin, and downgrade your account to standard user or limited user. The reason this is and then from now on, only use your account, only use admin when you have to have that kind of capability. There's a couple of ways you could do that, by the way. You can always right-click a program and use as admin. It shows up in the pop-up menu. Then you'll be asked for the password NIMDA, and you can continue on. The reason for that is malware, bad guys, even stuff that you click links in email and so forth, have whatever permissions you have. They inherit your permissions. And, of course, if you're administrator, that means you can do anything you want. So they get all power. If you're a limited user, so's the malware, which usually means they can't do, they can't modify anything. They can't install software. It stops about 80% of all browser-based infections cold. So it's a very useful thing to do. It's a little inconvenient because if you want to install software, you need to log in as administrator. If you want to modify things. I use Steam for gaming, and Steam, it's like some of the games won't run unless they're administrator. And that's bad programming, by the way. It's bad practice, but that's sometimes the case. So you right-click on the game, you say run as administrator. It is generally accepted practice in all operating systems that it's bad to run as root, super user, administrator. Those are all the same things because it's too powerful. You can't handle the power. You don't want to give that power to bad guys. 8888 Ask Leo. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Is this Nathan Staten, our musical director? Is this some strangely remixed version of this song? It sounds odd. Is it the Beatles? It must be the George Martin remix for Love. Is it from the Love album? It sounds a little odd. Isn't that funny when you know a band so well, you've heard their songs thousands of times? The slightest difference. I interviewed Neil Young. You know who he is? A rock and roller this week for one of our podcasts, Triangulation. And we were talking about high-res music, because that's his thing, you know, is he says, I want you to hear the music as we, the artists, hear it. And he's just never been happy. He was complained about the iPod from the day it came out. He said, gosh, they're compressing that music so much. They're taking 95% of the music out of it to make it small enough to fit on a player or on your hard drive or transmit over the internet. And it's just not the experience that we, as the artist, want you to hear. So he did a Kickstarter and raised money, crowdfunded this player called the Pono Player. It's $400, but it plays back higher quality music than CD quality. And there's, of course, a big debate over whether anybody can hear the difference and so forth. And I asked him at the time, I said, we talked on Monday, why haven't the Beatles ever released a high-res version of their music? The best you can get is CD quality. They remastered it in 2009. George Martin did a lot of work with Beatles songs for the Love show, the Cirque du Soleil show, and I think that must be from the Love album, the Cirque du Soleil show in Las Vegas. But to my knowledge, at the time, nobody had released a higher quality version of the Beatles stuff. 24-bit FLAC. I just bought it. So apparently, I got emails from Evan, one of our listeners, who said, you know, there was a release. It's in a metal green apple from the 2009 remasters. They're still at CD sampling rates, 44,100 samples per second. But they're 24-bit instead of 16-bit. And they're uncompressed. They're FLAC. And I said, oh. So I immediately, being a Beatles fan, ordered that. And I'd be very curious to see how or if that sounds different at all. It's only the 80th time I've bought these albums. So what? I bought the CDs when they came out. What the heck? One more time. Actually, Neil mentioned that. He said, the only thing that really irritates listeners is that we have to keep buying music. First you buy the album, then you buy the cassette, then you buy the 8-track, then you buy the CD, then you buy the digital download. We bought the same album 5 or 6 times. And now, one more time. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. And Brennan's on the line, our next caller from Orange County. Hi, Brennan. Oh, I got to push a button. Sorry, Brennan. I'm just sitting here like an idiot. Hi, Brennan.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going great. How are you?
Good, thanks. I got a quick question for you. So I've got a 2012 MacBook Pro. It's running Mountain Lion right now. That's 10.8.5. And I put a solid-state drive on that. I love it. It's great. I've also got a 2010 Mac Pro. It's got like the 2.66 quad core processor. Mm-hmm. And so I'm an audio engineer, and I use MacBook Pro a lot, just because, I mean, it just runs real fast and certain plugins and stuff.
As many audio engineers do. What kind of audio do you do? Music? Spoken word?
I do anything that pays.
Sound
mostly,
effects?
Mostly music. I actually work for two recording studios and a small video game company.
How do you come down on this high-res music thing?
You know what? I heard you talking about it, and I think it's great and everything, but I do have a big problem with it. My big problem is that they're advertising like certain songs or albums as like HD. Yeah. But the thing is they recorded them originally on like a reel-to-reel machine.
Right.
And so when you're like, and so then all they're doing is just like, put into a digital format. So if you're recording that at like 192K, 24 bits, you're just capturing like, you know, bad quality audio from the reel. Well,
it's true. If the reel to reel sounds bad, it's not going to sound good. Garbage in, garbage out. Although I asked Neil about this, he said, you know, because we were talking about one of his great albums, which is 1971 performance in Toronto at Massey Hall. It's just him and a guitar. And he said, yeah, that was recorded on 2-track tape, but if it's recorded well enough, fast enough, the tape's moving fast enough, the microphones are good, there's a lot of information on an analog recording that might be lost if you sample it at too low a rate. The question is, what's the right rate is the question, and then the debate rages on that.
Honestly, though, like, it's, I'm all for it, though. Like, I mean, you know, MP3 is really not good. And
MP3 we know is bad. Yeah.
So I'm all for uncompressed audio.
All right.
I like it. It's cool.
Thank you. I didn't mean to sidetrack you. So what's your question?
So, but anyway, so yeah, I want to set up, I want to clone my hard drive from my MacBook Pro onto my Mac Pro, the older one, just because I have everything set the way I like it. All the programs work together. Everything's good. Yeah. The operating system's, like, working. But I am worried about, like, I don't know if I were to clone that drive and put it onto the Mac Pro, which I'd eventually put a solid-state drive on as well. Like, are there going to be hardware issues? Like,
there might be. You know, the way to do this is clone it on a USB drive.
Okay.
And then, which is good anyway, because you're going to, now you have a nice backup of the laptop. Then plug the USB drive into the tower case. Reboot the case. Hold down. You know this. Hold down the option key. It'll give you. It'll see. Oh, you have a bootable drive outside and a bootable drive inside. Which one do you want to boot? Boot to the external drive. See how it works. The problem is that drivers will be different, right? The operating system has, I know you don't see it on Macintosh. You see it on Windows, but on Macintosh they hide it, but it still has drivers. And the drivers, the hardware on the laptop is different from the hardware on the desktop.
Right, yeah, that's my worry.
But OS X may be smart enough to say, as Windows will, oh, I see you have a different sound card. Oh, I see you have a different motherboard. Oh, and download or install the right driver. Worst case, what I would do is do this and then run the OS installer for the version of the operating system you want to use. If it's Yosemite, you can download that. And in other words, replace the operating system on that disk.
Mm-hmm.
And that'll give you the operating system with all the appropriate drivers. The applications will still be there and should run unmodified. I don't know if you've ever done this. But this is one of the things OS X does really well. Apple's just really done this nicely. You can take, and I've done this with my Mac Pro because it was acting finicky. You can reinstall the operating system kind of on top. It moves some files to a different folder that says, you know, old operating system. But in most cases, everything runs just as it did. You've just replaced the operating system. So the answer is you can do this, but you may have to do some finagling, like reinstalling the operating system once you've cloned the drive.
Yeah, well, I would have, honestly, like, I would have, you know, just upgraded the Mac Pro to Mountain Lion, but I think you still have to purchase Mountain Lion.
Yeah, so that might be, it's not expensive, it's like $20, right?
Yeah, I know.
And then it's free after that. That's the nice thing. Apple no longer charges for operating system upgrades.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you certainly could do it. Then people are saying you could also use the migration assistant or Time Machine and back up your data on Time Machine. Time Machine doesn't back up applications, but it does back up data. But you want to move applications over too, right?
I want, because everything's working perfectly, and I've had problems in the past. Like,
yeah. I think you could do this, but the way to do it is try it with an external drive first.
Okay, and does that external drive have to be dedicated to...
Well, you're just doing it.
Disk image.
You're just doing it now. No, you could put a disk image on it. You're just doing it now to test, and then if it doesn't work or weird things go wrong, you can just reboot, and now you're going to boot from the internal drive. This is just a test. If it works mostly okay, you could reinstall the existing operating system. Doesn't have to be Lion. It could be whatever you're using, and reinstall it on top of the external disk, and then you can clone that external disk.
I see.
See what I'm saying? It's more for test purposes.
Yeah, okay, that makes sense.
Yeah. See if that works. Nice talking to you. Thank you. I appreciate the call. I have been doing a lot of research on this high-res music thing. And, you know, and the principle of it, I love the idea, is you're going to own the Studio Master. Whatever the most music for the last 20 years is recorded digitally anyway. You want to have the same master that, instead of downsampling it to a CD or worse, compressing it to AAC or MP3, you're owning the high-quality master of it. And usually it's not much more expensive. Most of the CDs I've purchased, the high-res CDs, are $18, not much more than a regular CD. But I think that the truth is probably you don't want to go higher than 96. If you go to 192 sampling rate, that introduces errors that people actually may be hearing and saying, hey, that sounds good, but it's not what you want. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More of your calls coming up right after news at the top of the hour. Stay here. Well, hey, 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 how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, smartphones, smartwatches, digital photography, high-res music. If it's digital, we talk about it. Phone number, 888-827-5536. That's 8888-ASK-LEO. You can also visit our website, techguylabs.com, for links to the chat room, links to everything. If I mention something, there'll be a link to it there. So you don't have to write anything down. TechGuyLabs.com. Rob is in Valley Center, California. Our next caller. Hey, Rob, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo. Hey. Me and my wife have been listening to you for about a year. We're rookie techs, the basic
nice.
Novice.
Good. Welcome.
We appreciate the information you give out.
Thank you.
Here's the situation. We just moved, and we have a new cable provider, internet provider, called Mediacom. Okay. Never had them, heard of them. I work from home. And my computer's plugged into the modem, I think. But here's the situation I'm running into. My VPN to my work, it goes in and out. I lose signal. In addition to that, when we run our iPad Wi-Fi, it loses connection all the time, and our television as well. I was wondering, is there anything that we can do? We paid a little more for the upgrade internet to get the better service because we're a little bit remote.
Good.
But I was wondering if there's anything you could suggest what we can do.
Mediacom probably provided the cable modem, right?
One of the modems. We have two. One is Aeris, and then we have our Netgear. I don't know what.
Well, Netgear is a router. The Aeris is a modem.
The Aeris, okay.
Yeah. And so did you provide that, or did Mediacom provide that?
The Aeris, the Mediacom did.
Okay.
Netgear is ours.
Yeah. And do you know if they gave you DOCSIS 3 service? Does that sound familiar?
To tell you the truth, my wife is here when they installed it, so I'm not.
So
sure.
That's when you call them, that's one thing to ask about and say, hey, I would check the Aeris and see if it's a late if it's a recent model or if it's an older one.
Okay.
And sometimes cable companies, you know, they're renting you that, usually $5 to $7 a month for that modem, whereas you could go and buy one identical model or maybe even a more recent, better model. And own it and not pay that rent anymore. So you first thing to ask them is, can I buy my own modem? And which models are approved? It will be Aeris for sure, since they give you an Aeris. And Aeris DOCSIS 3 is what you want. Now, of course, they have to have DOCSIS 3 on the other side too. So that's the next question is, do you offer DOCSIS 3 service? This is the latest form of cable modem data and is more reliable and faster. Sometimes cable companies, especially a small one like Mediacom, you know, they have old stuff and they have new stuff. And sometimes they put you on the old one. You know, but if you ask, they often will say, oh, yeah, we could put you on the DOCSIS 3. You want to be on the DOCSIS 3?
Okay, so basically just ask them what modem we have. And if they don't have, if we're not on the 3, ask them.
Ask them nicely, do you offer DOCSIS 3 service? Is this DOCSIS 3? Would you mind if I bought my own? Buying your own is always better. It's cheaper in the long run. After a year or two, you pay for it. And it's going to be late model and better condition. You know, that's somebody else has had that. Then the next thing, of course, is that modem's connected to your router, your Netgear.
Okay. And if
hold on. I'm not done. Because the Netgear could also be a source of dropping the signal. I mean, it could be anywhere along that chain. It could be Mediacom just, you know, going away and coming back. It could be the Aeris going away, coming back. You can look at lights on the front, sometimes diagnose that. If you read the manual, and you might have to go online to do that, you'll see that the Aeris has a number of green lights on the front, some blinking, some steady. They tell you, for instance, if the internet is working or not. So those lights are useful for diagnostic purposes. But sometimes the router can cause this problem. And people often reboot their router and get improved internet capability. So a router can, you know, a router is basically just a very cheap computer. And an older router or a router that's burnt out, you know, this is not an uncommon symptom. So you might also think about getting is it a new router?
We've had it probably for 3 to 4 years.
Yeah, time to get a new router. Absolutely. And you can get more modern Wi-Fi routers based on the new 802.11ac standard. That's a new standard just being ratified this year. And that is, it has many features that make it more reliable and better distance and so forth.
What kind of cost am I looking at for a new router?
You know, you can get new routers for $40. Linksys is cheap. I generally say spend some money if you can afford it. The modem will be about $150. A new router will be about the same. So you're talking about $300 here. But it should improve your service, unless the problem is just MediaCom dropping out.
Gotcha.
And all you can do about that is complain.
Thank you, Leah.
You're welcome. My pleasure. It's, you know, we live in amazing times. Stuff is amazing. The fact that you can get 20 megabits down of data is mind-boggling to somebody like me who started at 300 bits per second. Mind-boggling. But it's not perfect by any means. That's why I like science fiction movies where everything's a little beat up and scratched and dirty, as opposed to the science fiction movies where everything's shiny and new. Because the truth is, life is not shiny and new. It only for the first 5 minutes, and then it's beat up and scratched and dirty for the rest of its life. So technology is the same thing. It's exciting. It's great we can get high-speed internet. And, yeah, it goes out a lot or something. So don't expect miracles, but you can certainly make things more reliable by upgrading the equipment. And maybe just a little conversation with the MediaCom guy. Maybe, you know, you said you're distant from the office. Maybe, you know, maybe they don't have the best signal out there. Maybe they need new equipment out in the at the head end, which is somewhere in your neighborhood. Diane is on the line from Encino, California. Hi, Diane. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I'm old and nervous about anything to do with computers, but this is what happened. I was on a travel website, and a page popped up. It took up the whole screen, and it screamed at me, "You have a virus, you're infected, call this number immediately."
You didn't believe it, did you, Diane?
No.
Of course not.
It was a scam, so I tried to, like, red dot it out, and it wouldn't let me do it, so I closed Safari and I turned off my computer.
You just said a magic word to me. Safari. Safari. That's good news, because all of the bad guys go after Windows PCs. They don't go after Macs.
Well, later in the day, though, you know, so I was so nervous, so I just turned everything off. But later in the day, I got a call from my Visa card, Capital One, and they're saying my card was compromised. So then I thought, oh, does this, you know, is my whole computer compromised?
No.
And I thought, could it be related?
No.
To go into my email or my check bank statements or anything like that.
No. And of course, your bank doesn't send your whole credit card number anyway for that very reason. Email is not secure.
But when I look, online, I mean, is that safe?
Yeah. Nobody's in your computer.
No one's in my computer.
Think about it. You use that Capital One card. You go to a restaurant. Guy takes it, disappears for 5 minutes, comes back. Did that ever happen to you?
Yes.
Yeah. That's much more likely what happened.
So what was this virus thing that they said called?
It's a pop-up. It's meaningless. Any website can do this. And with JavaScript, they can even make it so you can't red dot it out.
Yeah, well, that's why I couldn't.
But you did the right thing. You closed Safari, rebooted your computer, no problem.
Okay.
In fact, you probably went even a little farther than you had to. Closing Safari would have been sufficient. But that happens. They can use a technology called JavaScript to kind of keep you from closing the window because they want you to believe it. But any website could pop that up. Now, if that was a good, reliable website, that may be a sign that they themselves have been infected.
Oh.
If it was a good, you know, a site that you normally go to and there's no problem, or if it was just kind of some random site on the internet, that happens all the time.
Like a travel website.
But had you ever been there before?
No.
Yeah, they're probably corrupted. Mm. But you're safe.
I'm safe.
Because you're on a Mac. None of this stuff affects Macs.
I know, but I panic
That's why you got a Mac, right?
Right. But I thought, oh my God, I can't open my mail. But my computer seems to be working.
It's fine.
Seems slow.
Use the internet. You can use your mail. You can use your browser. The thing to watch out for is a site where you type in your credit card number because then you're giving it to somebody. But you're not doing that, right?
For airlines or.
But make sure it's a secure site before you do that. Actually, we'll talk about that when we come back. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888, Ask Leo. We were talking to Diane and Encino. I think we've lost. She's hung up. She got tired of me. But I just want to finish the thought. The pop-up by itself doesn't mean that you've been infected. Websites can pop up things. You know that. This is something that happens all the time. So even though it says you're infected, that's just the pop-up saying you're infected. It doesn't mean you are infected. And you can ignore it. And it's even possible with a pop-up to lock it so you can't close the window. It can do all of that stuff. That's fine. Just close your browser and you're not at risk. The good news is, I think, you know, credit cards in the United States anyway have really historically been fairly insecure. And we didn't care as consumers because the banks paid. You weren't liable for those bad charges. So who cares, right? Just get a new credit card and move on. Bank eats it. That's who cares. So with the recent spate of break-ins and, you know, the Target and the Home Depot and all the companies whose credit card information has been released into the wild, the banks have started to say, this is costing us. They finally managed to convince Congress to pass a law that is going to change how credit cards work in the United States. Come October, all credit cards will have to have a chip in them that will be better than just a number or that mag stripe. It'll be harder to counterfeit. Now, that doesn't solve the online problem. If your credit card escapes into the wild, you know, you don't need to swipe a card to use it to do online purchases. You just need the number. So I think there's still going to be a good deal of fraud going on. People can't get your number, though, unless you give it to them, either by giving them a card and using it where somebody wanders off. In Europe, they don't wander off. They don't go back to the credit card machine behind the curtain in restaurants. They actually bring one out to you so you can see it. You never lose control of the card. I imagine that'll start happening in restaurants in the U.S. The problem is it's so expensive to upgrade the infrastructure to the chip and pin, to the touch and pay, you know, the Apple Pay and the Google Wallet and all that stuff. That just takes time. But this fall, you know, we're starting to enter a new era, and I think credit cards will be somewhat safer. Crossing our fingers here. Meanwhile, you're not liable, so go ahead. Use your credit card online. Just be prudent with it. I think there are ways credit card companies could make this better, but it's at the cost, frankly, of being less convenient for consumers. For instance, a credit card, and many credit card numbers companies do offer this, can make a one-time credit card number that you can either use only for one purchase or only for one merchant. So you can go to your Discover card and say, look, I want a number that I'm going to use only with Amazon and only on Amazon, and that number won't be good for anyone else. And that's a nice form of security as well. You might inquire to see if your credit card company offers one-time credit card numbers. And, of course, eventually the touch and pay solutions are going to be great. Apple Pay is so secure because it uses your fingerprint on the Apple phone or to verify your identity. And it's also good for you because it doesn't pass your credit card number along to the merchant. Just a token that the merchant can use with your bank to get the money. So the merchant, even if they're broken into, doesn't have any of your information. That's great. So Apple Pay and Google Wallet and these touch-to-pay solutions are excellent for your security, for the merchant's security, and banks love them. And that's why I think that's going to just kind of take over the next year or so. 8888 to ask Leo. Actually, before we go to Vladimir, let's go to Vincent. He's been hanging on the longest from Fullerton, California. Hi, Vincent.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm doing good. How about yourself?
Very well. What can I do for you?
My wife is blind, and so we have a little girl. She's almost a year, mm-hmm. and she tries to go to, like, PBS and things for her when I'm not home. But, you know, cable box can time out and things like that. And it's hard for her to go back and change the inputs and all that.
Yeah.
So I was thinking of getting, like, the Logitech Harmony Universal Remote.
Great solution.
Yeah, but they have a smartphone app.
Right.
So I was thinking of using her screen reader on her iPhone.
Perfect.
To make it accessible for her.
Perfect.
But I was just curious how accessible they are. Like, are they coded well? Are the buttons labeled properly for her to actually even use it?
That's a great question, which I am not qualified to answer. But somebody listening can help me with that, because that's a great idea. You know, some phones, not the iPhone, some phones have built-in infrared on the phone. For instance, my Samsung Galaxy S6 comes with a remote control application that you can use with the infrared on the phone, and the phone becomes the remote. It's, in effect, like a Logitech smart remote in the phone. But the way that Harmony's doing it, which is actually very clever, is it talks via Bluetooth to your phone. So your phone interfaces with the remote, and the remote has the infrared or RF sensors to control your devices. That's probably an easier, maybe not easier, but a better way to do it. As for accessibility, of course, I imagine your wife has found the accessibility pretty good on the iPhone, right?
She has, yeah. The problem is if the programmers don't take advantage of it.
Exactly. And that I don't know because I haven't used the Logitech. I'm not blind, so even if I had used it, I probably would cheat and look at it. my experience has been that the iPhone is absolutely fantastic for accessibility. I don't know how well Logitech's apps are written. That's the problem. So I'll tell you what, if anybody does know, if you're a blind listener, and we have many, or you know about accessibility and you have some experience with the Logitech app on the iPhone, give us a ring or visit the website techguylabs.com, add your comment there, because I would love to know that. So it's using Wi-Fi to talk to the smartphone. Okay. How well does that work? Leo Laporte, the tech guy. That makes more sense, actually. Wi-Fi would be better to talk to the iPhone than Bluetooth because it would have more range. So they're both on the Wi-Fi network. So you put your Harmony on the Wi-Fi network? That's interesting. Anybody have any experience with the Logitech software on the iPhone as far as accessibility goes? Yeah, ask your mom. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo. That's the number moving along to Vladimir in Carlsbad. Thanks for hanging on, Vladimir. Leo Laporte here. Hello, Vladimir.
Oh, hi,
you're
Leo.
On. Hello, welcome.
Oh, it's much better because it was breaking up before. Anyway, I had a question about integration of smartphones into particularly BMW i3, which I recently bought.
That's the electric BMW, isn't it?
Yes, I love it.
How do you like it? Yeah. Is it all electric, or is it a hybrid, or is there a little gas?
No, it's actually neither one. It's all electric, and there's also range extender, which is a small motorcycle engine, like two-cylinder with 2-gallon tank, which charges the battery only. Right. It doesn't drive the car.
Yeah, but that makes sense. That way you don't get stuck with the battery dying in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But here's the problem. My previous car was a Prius plug-in, and putting addresses in the phone book in the car was tedious. You have to put each letter at a time, which was absolutely, crazy. So I hope that this new car, which is an ultimate driving machine, would hook up with my latest.
My car does. It copies the directory over. Everything's done. It does.
Yeah. Listen. It copies the names and phone numbers, but with my latest Nexus 6, which I thought was the latest, and you always said that it's the pure Google experience.
Pure Google,
yeah. So it did pair with the car. It did uploaded all the records with phone numbers, so I can dial the number. I can see the name, but there are no addresses.
Listen.
I had a previous phone, which is Nexus 5, with Lollipop. Both are Lollipop.
Yeah.
So I tried them both, and no addresses. So I can't use it with GPS. I have to put the same tedious weight.
Should have bought an Audi.
Okay, well.
No, I'm jealous because I want the i3. But the Audi does copy over addresses, and you can use it in GPS.
I found a crazy solution. I have an old phone, which is like 4 years old, Moto X, the first generation. Which has the KitKat, I guess it's 4.4.
Yeah.
And it does.
Oh, interesting.
A good job. It transferred everything.
So it's not the BMW, it's the phone.
It's not. And I talked to BMW, and they're absolutely clueless, their tech support. They even have a Genius program, which is supposed to know everything. But they said, oh, you know what? We did everything to respect Apple iPhone, which has all the functions.
Yeah.
You always said that Apple only has, 5% of the market. And
no, it has half the market in the U.S., but it has all of the BMW market. There's a natural confluence.
So anyway, My question is there any trick to make Nexus 6? Because it's my latest, and I love this phone.
I wonder why it doesn't. That's really odd.
It is.
It works with KitKat on a Moto X. It copies all of the data, including the address. That's nice, because you could say, drive to Joe's house, and it knows where Joe's house is. I cannot think for the life of me. It sounds like it might be a Lollipop security feature. I'm not sure.
Yeah, that's what I thought. So my question is there any way to go back to KitKat on...
No. I mean, you could root the phone, and you want to do it on the Nexus 6?
Well, either one. Nexus 5 or Nexus.
Whichever one you don't use all the time, that's the one to try this on. Don't do it on the one you want to keep. Because what you'll do is you'll root the phone, which is easy to do with either Nexus device, put an older ROM on there. You can find, you know, Cyanogen Mod 10, which will be KitKat. You can find that. Or CM11, I guess.
So there's no way to go back. If I root the phone, because it's still under warranty, and...
Root the Nexus 5, and then... you can go back and forth. Once you root it and put a custom recovery on it, which is the process required to put custom firmware on the phone, you can put any firmware you want, including the original, you know, the original Nexus 5 ROMs and the Nexus 6 ROMs are also available. So you can always go back and forth if you wish to.
Okay. That's
I think you'll have to, unfortunately, the Bluetooth will not recognize. I don't know how the BMW works with the directories. But on my car, once you do that, you have to repair it with the phone. I guess it does keep the directory. So if it keeps the directory, even though that phone is no longer around, then you're good. That's the key. Yeah, you don't want it to dump the directory and use the new one when you unroot or undo it.
Well, if I dump the directory from Moto X, as soon as I unpair it, it disappears. It doesn't stay there.
Aha! See, that's the problem you're going to have. But I guess you don't.
You can go each address by address and kind of resave it in the vehicle memory. That's one way.
What a pain!
Yes.
Now you understand why all the manufacturers are excited about Apple Play or CarPlay, I guess Apple calls it, and the new Android CarPlay, because in effect the phone will now become the smarts of your car. I'm surprised the i3 doesn't do it, but I guess it just missed by a hair.
Leo, you know, you're breaking up. I'm sorry.
You need a new phone. We'll just take this off the air. But somebody's saying look at the BMW site maybe to see. I think this has to do with, I don't know for sure, but it has to do with something that a good decision that Google's made, right, about the capabilities. And Lollipop, maybe they said, let's be most secure. Let's not offer the addresses. Let's just copy the phone number. It seems dumb. But this is the solution that in the next couple of years, most cars will allow you to, when you get in the car with an Android or an iPhone, it will, in effect, it'll have a screen which will, in effect, become the screen that is on your phone and will have the phone's capabilities in terms of GPS, navigation, phone calls, all of that stuff. Anybody have an experience with this? Is there something in Lollipop that prevents the BMW i3 from taking the full address book? I don't know of anything. Sorry about the breakup, Vladimir. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Veronica's next in Los Angeles. Hi, Veronica.
Hola, Leo. How are you?
Hola. I'm very well. How are you?
Beautiful. I'm doing great. Thank you so much. So my question of the day is basically, is there something that I can do with my technology? I carry an iPhone. My husband has a Samsung, and then we also have like iPads and a MacBook Air. And when we often take pictures when we're usually out, you know, we're so dependent on it that we forget to carry our cameras.
I know, but that's what everybody does now. Isn't that the greatest thing about a smartphone? You got a good camera in your pocket.
You're right, but here's the downside to it, which I went back to my old camera, was that because I noticed that when I upload my pictures onto, my MacBook, and then I go ahead and I send them out either to Costco or CVS or any other print store, the quality is poor. So does that mean that, is there something that I can do?
Well, you're not making giant posters, are you? Just 5x7 prints?
Uh-huh, 4x6.
They should look great because the iPhone is 8 megapixels. It's more than enough to give you good prints. So one thing I would try is you're doing it the right way, which is getting it to the Mac first. Because if you email a picture on an iPhone, it will downsize it, unless you specifically say send the original. But you're doing the right thing. You're connecting your phone up to the Photos app, and it's importing the photo. So you have the original, right? And it looks good on the screen, right?
I think like some of the captures that, I mean, some of the pictures that we have are...
Blame the photo processor. Maybe just try this for me. Use Apple's own photo processing. It's built into iPhoto and Photos.
Oh, okay.
And order prints from them. They do a really good job. If they still look bad, then check the settings in your phone. Make sure you're using the full resolution available to it and all of that. But it should look great. And it's probably just the people who are doing the prints aren't doing a good job for you. So... the test is to just get a few prints from Apple directly, because I know it. Though they are the best that you can get. They use very good printers. They don't print it themselves. They use a service, but they do a good job. See if that works for you. Leo Laporte,
the tech guy.
I think Costco's the issue. Be my guess. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Time, as always, at this time of the day, to say hello to my buddy, Dick DiBartolo, Mad Magazine's maddest writer. We call him the Gizwiz because he's always got a gadget or a gizmo. Hi, Dickie D. Have you ever...
Hey, how you doing?
Have you ever been sued for a bad review of a gadget or a gizmo?
No.
No.
Once. A lady, she sent me something to review, and it was on Gizwiz. And... you said something about it was something, a GPS thing. And you said, well, why would you buy that? You get that free on your phone.
Yeah.
And I said, well, that's true, but this does this and this. Anyway, she wrote me a letter and said, when I sent you a product sample, I expected a very positive review. Can you imagine that? And I said, well, you know what? I'm so glad you did this before I did this, because I was going to do it next Sunday on ABC
but
News.
But I think not now.
So I'll just return it today and not after ABC. Yeah.
Yeah.
That was about the only time.
Right on, Daddy-O. Well, we were just talking about this new bill, and I hope it passes Congress. The Consumer Review Freedom Act. It's a good thing. Surprising.
Okay.
Coming from Congress. It makes so apparently when you buy stuff sometimes online, there's something in there called a non-disparagement clause that says you're not allowed to say anything bad about this company or the product we sold you. You know, they're worried about
I always thought that was the non-asparagus clause.
Asparagus.
Oh,
it's as bad as asparagus. So it comes from a lawsuit that a company called ClearGear.com, they tried to charge a Utah couple $3,500 for a negative review they wrote on a website. And then when the couple said, we're not paying that, they reported them to the credit agencies. Anyway, the judge threw it out, but then there's going to be, I hope this law passes. If it doesn't, we should see who voted against it. That will make make all non-disparagement clauses in consumer contracts unenforceable. So go ahead, Dick. Say you hate it.
Yeah.
Actually, only review stuff you like. If you don't like it, you don't even talk about it.
I don't even talk about it. Yeah. No, if I see it at a trade show and I hate it, I mean, why bother? It's more fun to talk about things that really caught my eye.
So what's caught your eye this week?
Oh, well, I went to a show in the city called Time to Play Magazine Summer Showcase with toys that the company thought would be big this summer. And a couple of them I thought were very clever. So now you have your own GoPro. You don't want your four-year-old
to
have that.
No.
So VTech, which had the world's first smartwatch for four-year-olds, now has the Kitty Zoom Action Cam. Okay? So it does stop action, time-lapse photos, has a little micro SD card.
Oh, man.
I know. So a waterproof carrying case, a wrist strap.
It's a good time to be a kid.
Exactly. And the great thing is the entire kit. Now, the resolution's not amazing. The best it can do is 640 by 480. But you get everything in the kit, and it's under $60.
Oh, that's a good deal.
Yeah. So I think parents will actually love that. Yeah. And there's also games in there and special effects.
It even has the GoPro mount.
Yeah.
It looks just like a GoPro.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's very, very clever. So
my first GoPro. Remember Sony did that? My first Walkman.
Yes, my first, yeah.
My first
I think
GoPro.
They did my first lawsuit, but I'm not sure.
$60 is for kids. It's from VTech, which does, as you know, a lot of stuff for kids, tablets and so forth.
Yeah, that's exactly. Cool. And then the other thing I saw that I thought was clever. Do you know about the Minion movies? Have you seen any of them?
Despicable Me?
Yes, exactly.
Yes, exactly.
And so this company is called Skyrocket Toys, and they came out with Minion safety gear for kids. And there's some pictures on my website. So the helmet, you can either have the helmet with the one eye or the helmet with the two eyes.
Oh, so that way your kid doesn't mind wearing a helmet.
That's what I said. I said, you know what? This is a great idea. Kids will like wearing this stuff and make it safer for them when they skate or bike.
I love this. I'm going to get a Minion helmet. That looks awesome.
Oh, what are you kidding? But where's mine?
Oh, I want a Minion helmet.
I put it over there on the table. No, it's great. Yeah.
That's a great idea.
And they're reasonable. I think the helmets are under $25. And
Skyrocket makes that wheel rider you talked about. The thing.
Yes, they did. Yeah. And someone said, "Whoa, I have that wheel rider." Yeah. Boy, you have a great memory.
Amazing, isn't it?
Yeah.
What's your name again?
I was just going to say, but I said you have a great memory, but I'm not Robert.
Thank you, Robert DiBartolo. Yeah. Actually, if you want to know more about the things that GizWiz talks about, you should go to his website, gizwiz.biz. That's the place to go. He talks about gadgets that he mentions on this show and other shows like World News Now. And, of course, it's a great place to find out about the GizWiz show, which he's now doing with Chad, and it's on Patreon, and they're raising money, and... Yeah, your first episode, how'd it go? Go well?
Yeah, it went really... Chad is amazing. He built his own... It's a one-caster. You know, you have the tri-caster?
Yeah.
He has the one-caster.
He built a set.
He built a set, but he built a little board that, with my close-up, our two-shot...
You're kidding. That's awesome.
The lower thirds, Chad. The jingles. He's amazing.
He's doing the jingles and everything.
Everything.
Oh, man. Got to get over to patreon.com/gizwiz to find out more. And if you pay $1... Who knows? Maybe he'll get a TriCaster or something.
Yeah. A two-caster. We're working our way up.
You have a one-caster. Right. Going for the dual-caster. And then someday, in the sky, a TriCaster.
We'll buy your used one when you get the quad-caster.
Deal.
Okay.
Dick B. Dardobolo. What's your name again?
Yeah. Close. Yeah. Robert Stork.
Gizwiz.biz is his website. And oh, by the way, don't forget to play the What the Heck Is It contest for a chance to win an autographed copy of Mad Magazine. Thank you, Dickie D.
Thank you, sir.
I got a couple minutes left. That might be enough time to help Guido in Baldwin Park, California. Hi, Guido.
Hi, Leo. How are you doing today?
I'm wonderful. What can I do for you today?
Okay, about 9-10 years ago, I burned a CD with XP, all it. And, you know, I played and all that. And then later on, you know, I put it away. And I, just a few months ago, I found it and I tried to play it on my new version of Windows.
Mm.
And it doesn't play.
There's two possibilities.
Okay.
You know, there is such a thing as CD rot. I know we all thought CDs would last. Yeah, I know we all thought CDs would last forever, but the reflective material on the CD is metallic and it can actually rust. If you're in a humid area, they often do rust. So CDs do not last forever and they can go bad. The other possibility is you made the CD on XP in a kind of a non-standard way. There's two ways to make CDs. Disc at once, which is will make a CD that'll play in any audio player anywhere. Or track at a time. And, you know, in XP days, you could do this. You could drag files onto CDs. And that CD would be playable on your machine if you had the right driver. But if you didn't finalize the CD before you took it somewhere else, you wouldn't be able to play it anywhere else. So that's the other possibility. Could be the disc is literally has gone bad. It happens. Or could be it was recorded and not finalized. If it wasn't finalized, you can't go out and get software for your current system, Roxio and others sell it, that will allow you to finalize it now. Those are the two possibilities. I hope you didn't lose your data. That would be sad. CDs are not forever, but this show is. So come back and join us next time. Thanks to Heather Hamman, the phone ranger, Nathan Staten, our musical director. I'm Leo Laporte. I hope you have a great geek week. TechGuyLabs.com. We'll see you. Bye. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. I'm Leo Laporte. Thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget, the Tech Guy is just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows now on the Twit Netcast Network, and you'll find them all at twit.tv. We talk about Windows and Windows Weekly, Macintosh and MacBreak Weekly, iPad on iPad Today. You get your daily dose of tech news from Tech News Today and our weekly roundtable show, This Week in Tech. It's all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next time with another great Tech Guy podcast. Thanks for joining me. See you next time.